Monster Man, Episode 385, Dragons Revisited, Part 7. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we've done it. We have completed the super long section on dragons in Monstrous Manual, the 1993 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. And I've got two more dragons to cover, and then maybe we'll do a little bit of a wrap-up of the section. I think this episode might be shorter than some of our other episodes. We'll just see how it goes, because I don't want to move on to the post-dragon monsters, which are still quite dragon-y anyway, but I don't want to move on to them. I want to have all my dragon episodes just be dragons. We'll see how it works out. Okay. Without further ado, our first dragon is the Steel Dragon, which is also kind of a hair metal band from the Pittsburgh region. So Steel Dragons are very kind of pro-human-y. They often take on human or humanoid or demi-human forms, and they hang out in cities where they are social and, like, you know, unlike most dragons, they're not solitary. They like company. They like crowds and civilized areas, but they have to kind of lead a secret life because, unlike most dragons, they have to sustain themselves in, like, a pretty conventional manner. They can't just feed on the morning dew or eat gems and stuff. They have to go hunt. And obviously, they don't want to reveal to people that they're dragons. So they have a lot of, like, mysterious absences. You know, they come up with reasons why they can't be around. They go off into the wilderness and change back into their draconic form and hunt. So it's kind of a mystery element to them, which I do like. Because they live in urban environments and because they are very long-lived, they work hard to keep cities stable. So there's maybe kind of like a power behind the throne aspect to them. And they can be ambiguous because, you know, their thing is that they just like to keep things the same so that they will be safe and their hoard, which is in like a bank vault, will also be safe. So they're maintaining the status quo, kind of whether that status quo is good or bad, I feel like. So if the PCs are a disruptive force, they might wind up being an opponent. You know, maybe the Steel Dragon could even be like a politician or a gang boss or something like that. Alternatively, if some threat is menacing the city, they might wind up becoming a patron of the PCs, right? They might hire the PCs to solve a murder or whatever. I go back and forth on the Steel Dragon. I can't decide whether this is a fun idea for an NPC who just doesn't really need to be a dragon. I guess the bank vault with a dragon's hoard in it is a pretty fun idea. You know, dragons symbolize hoarding and greed, so like being a millionaire or something can kind of contribute to that. That's all right. And, you know, maybe the double life as a dragon is a bit different from if their double life was like a werewolf, right? They have essentially a secret identity rather than like a curse or a, you know, I said a double life, but maybe it's more like Clark Kent and Superman more than a person who turns into a wolf. I choked and I didn't say Larry Talbot, but obviously I meant Larry Talbot. So, okay, so there's that. But even if this needs to be a dragon, it 100% does not need to be, again, an entirely new species of dragon. Each of these draconic species has essentially a gimmick. I have spoken before about the value of gimmicks in monsters. There is nothing wrong with a good gimmick. Some antagonists or supporting characters in serial genre adventure fiction are fully fleshed out characters with their own motivations, loves and hates, all that kind of thing, and that's terrific. But a lot of them are just characters with a good gimmick. Not everybody shares my passion for, like, the world of comic books. Even I don't, you know, I don't keep up with the new stuff. It's just too time-consuming and expensive. But, you know, I love a good classic comic book. I don't really, like, keep up with professional wrestling, but I kind of love, like, the jargon and the sort of the history of professional wrestling, even though I don't really follow wrestling at all. But what these two things have in common is they're good at creating memorable villains. You need to convey, through a combination of performance and action, a villain's personality in a way that will be accessible to audience members for whom maybe this is their first time. You need to be able to understand the, like, goals and personality of the Penguin or Judge Death or the Macho Man Randy Savage. You need to be able to assimilate that information pretty quickly. And I contend that they are successful in this. So Hence, gimmick, which is the term used in both contexts. Steve Ditko described Spider-Man's web shooters as his web gimmick. And he ought to know. So, this dragon, you know, lives in the misty spray of a waterfall in a mountain glen. That dragon has an office and, like, smokes a big cigar. Great. 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 Don't necessarily need to be two totally different kinds of dragons. I mean, it's two different approaches to the same problem. It's fine. It's just, it reads as complicated to me. Okay, next up, yellow dragons. According to this, I don't get this. According to this, the existence of yellow dragons was predicted by sages based on their understanding of color theory, right? I guess the idea being that since there are red dragons and blue dragons, then there must be yellow dragons. But they're not chromatic dragons, and I don't know why. They seem like they should be chromatic dragons. I mean, they are evil. Is it because they're from a different D&D setting? Sometimes that trips me up. Anyway, they inhabit desert environments where they bury themselves in the sand like ant lions and then, you know, wait for their prey to happen by, which is an okay gimmick, although, again, maybe kind of beneath the dignity of a dragon, like, ooh, look at Mr., you know, puny humans over here, like, hiding in a hole to eat an ox cart. Their breath is sandblasting, which has, like, a little bit of kind of physical imagination about it that actually kind of gives me the shivers, which is that, you know, if you fail the save, you may be blinded by having sand blasted into your eyes. Only temporarily, but still, that's pretty gruesome. I don't like the idea of someone aiming a high-pressure hose of sand in my eyes, and I wish they would not do it. The desert thing gives me pause. This is the fourth distinct species of dragon that lives in deserts. That's a lot. Like, how many desert dragons do you think your campaign's gonna have? Is it at least four? That seems like a lot. Now, shout out to the now apparently defunct D&D podcast, Tom and Drew's Magic Item Reviews. They took some magic item that allowed you to sail around the desert, like on a sort of boat with skis, and turned it into a whole desert campaign setting. And yeah, maybe if you're in Dark Sun or whatever, you might have the need for four desert dragons. I contend that most places aren't going to. The desert dragon is going to be a pretty cool event. Fourth desert dragon might just be kind of so-so. I wonder how much of this game is being designed for that campaign. You know, the one where the guys have all been playing together since junior high school and the, you know, the world is 10,000 pages of hand scribbled notes. And every time they go and see like good King Osric, you know, they feel like they're visiting an old friend and they have memories of that campaign running through their whole lives. And those campaigns do exist and they're amazing, but they're in a distinct minority. Among game campaigns. And yet I feel like so many things are written toward them, right? Written on the assumption that that is what campaigns are supposed to be like, and all the rest of us are just failing. I mean, my campaigns tend to be a couple years long. I feel like among my like group of gaming friends, I am unusual in my preference for the long form. But I don't go that long, geez. I don't know. Is it just an impulse toward completism? That would seem to be the obvious one, but I don't know. Just feels like too many dragons. And the problem with it is, the thing about it from a monster book analysis perspective, is that the yellow dragon is fine. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. You could do a very fun yellow dragon fight scene. Probably not much more than a fight scene. It does seem to be what they're mainly interested in. But you could 100% write a yellow dragon fight scene and everybody could have a good time. And the steel dragon's got legs, you know? Like, you could do a lot of interesting stuff with the steel dragon. No individual one of these monsters is bad. But I do feel like I got given the reading list and it was 25 cowboy novels. That's not that I don't like stories about cowboys, but 25 of them is a lot. And I feel the same way about dragons. Now, from here, we are about to move into the well-populated, but not as well-populated world of creatures that are not technically dragons. So we're going to look at some of the kind of longer branches on the dragon family tree. Now, some of these we've seen before, like our next entry, the dragon turtle, but we're going to see how they've changed since the last time we saw them. And I hope that you'll join me for that next time on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter @GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.